A from San Diego.
My name is Felix. I'm an alcoholic. I want to welcome Jeff and Zach, and congratulations, Maureen, on your 3 years of sobriety, and John, 17 years, and Cynthia, great job on your I'm a little nervous, you know, and what it was like and what happened, what it's like now. My dad's in town. He's been in town for about a month and a half. He leaves on Friday, and I was in Mexico for 2 weeks visiting him. And when I was out there drinking and drugging, man, he didn't know where I was at. My mother, deceased, and I had a lot of guilt and shame. And because my dad's an immigrant from Mexico, and he was able to buy a house here and about there, and I went to college, and I couldn't get nowhere, and one of the things we have today, me and my father are very, very close. I mean, I take care of his finances, and I've been able to spend some time with him, some quality time with him, and I'm grateful to this program for me to be able to do that, because he's the closest thing, I took him to church on Sunday, he goes to Mass, I went to Mass with him on Sunday, and it was just incredible. And I just would like to share that because in my story, you'll find out, I use drugs like Cynthia, and I was just out there. I was just out there, and I felt a lot of guilt and shame because of the fact that here my father, comes from nowhere, can't even speak English, and he's a very, very, successful man. And here I am, not, English and went to college and it didn't get anywhere, So, and I was born in San Jose, California, and to Mexican, and I speak fluent Spanish, and we grew up poor. I was at a speaker. I heard Ralph over the weekend at Southern Cal, and he talked about dysfunction. And, before I came into the program, I didn't know about a dysfunctional family, but our family was dysfunctional. There was infidelity. There was, my father really, at that time, he just really didn't want kids. So he didn't want any part of that, but I didn't know any better. I thought, it was a normal family, growing up. We were poor. We were, we did the best we could, I was into sports and I I was running all the time. I was playing basketball and I was very football, basketball, every sport I'd excel at. And so I was very good at that. But then early on, I knew there's something wrong with me. I knew that I was a little bit different. I didn't know, what that was, but I just could tell there's something. I was a little bit irritable and discontent, like Dr. Sirkworth talks about. I was irritable and discontent, and I didn't know why. And I had never taken a drink. I didn't take a drink till I was about 13 years old. And irritable and discontent already. And I had that alcoholism started already at that early age. And I'm real grateful for my mother. My mother was a strict Catholic, and she took us to catechism, and I had to go to catechism, and I had to be, but I'm really grateful for that because, I knew who God was, and I knew that during that, that there was a God, and but at the time, I didn't really feel like, that I turned my back on God. I felt like, I didn't have time for you. And so early on, I started drinking about 13, and then I was going to school, and I excelled at school, and I was, I played chess, and I did good in grades, and I never even, I drank that one time. I think, it was just a minor drink, and then about 18 years old, I smoked a little pot, and then it was pretty normal. It was like everybody was doing it, but I didn't. I'm a periodic. I don't drink every day. I drink sometimes, like once a week, but I would always be thinking about it. I'm always thinking about it, And the other thing I got to share is I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief. There's an associate that works for me, and he describes exactly how I was. He'll start lying to me, and I know he's lying. And he'll say, and he'll start lying, and I go, wow, that's how I used to be. I used to lie for no reason, and believed the lies, you know. So, you know, it's funny. I go, man. And I shake my head. He doesn't have a drinking problem, but you can have alcoholism without drinking, you know. And that's what I want to share. That, and so I continued on, and I went to college, and I had a couple years of college, and then I started using more drugs and alcohol, and I was just out there, you know. And my parents at that time retired, and they went to Mexico, and it was. You know, it was on. I was a couple years, and I quit college, and then I went out, and I was just, stealing from the liquor store, and I was just doing what it is, you know, to maintain drinking and drugging, and it went on for a long time, and I didn't know that, I didn't have an idea of that I had a problem. You know, I've done service work. You know, in jails, and I go out there, and you know, you'll see, and I've done 1, 2, 3 steps with them, and they never get the equation that they have. And that's the way I was. I didn't realize that I had a problem. I thought I was normal. One time, my sister tells me, she goes, "You know what? I think you got a drinking and drug problem." And I said, "No, I don't." You know, I was in denial. I says, "I'm enjoying myself," but she's seen what was going on with me. And so she knew exactly that, you know, I had that problem, and I didn't at that time I didn't want to admit that I had a problem. I was still partying, and so, you know, I left to my own devices. You know, I would go back to that drinking. So I continued on, and it was during that time, you know, my parents didn't know if I was dead or alive, and they thought, you know what, this young son of mine is, you know, because I've never called back, and my parents were back in Mexico, and I would never call them, and they wouldn't know if I was lost or gone. You know, I was just out there, you know, just drinking and drugging, and just doing what we do out there, and finally, one time I went back, and my parents, and I really believe in prayer. And my parents, you know, they're very strict, and so we started praying, and my parents prayed for me for a long time, and about a couple years later, you know, I got sober. You know, it was miraculous, and it just happened. I don't know how it happened, but you know, it happened. But one of the things that happened after I got sober was that, I came to the fellowship. I would go to Mesa Vista Hospital all the time. I went there for a couple years. And during that time, in those 2 years, I couldn't stay sober. I couldn't stay sober. I would go in there, and I would say, yeah, I know the one first step, second step, third step. And I was like a chameleon, you know, and I didn't really... I thought, hey, I was a chameleon out there. Now I'm a chameleon in here. And so I started relapsing off and on for a long time. And so it was a lot of, during that time, with every fiber of my body, I wanted to be sober. But I couldn't stay sober. I just struggled. You know, I was a coffee maker Friday night. I was there every night, and I could not do it. And so finally, after many attempts, I realized that one of the things that I wasn't doing is I wasn't working any of the steps. I was just going there. I was doing the fellowship. I was, you know, I knew I had a problem. I knew that, you know, even though I knew that I was powerless over alcohol, that wasn't enough. I realized that I needed more. I needed to concede to myself, you know, and one time I said to my mom, I said, you know what, Mom, I've got a problem, and she said, yeah, you do, and then my dad said, no, you don't have a problem, but you know what, I have to concede to myself. No matter what anybody else says, you know, I have to concede to myself that I'm powerless, and my life became unmanageable. And so what happened was that, you know, I finally. Right across the way, there's a group called Water Walkers, and I started going there early on. And at Water Walkers, I ran into a guy named Don T, and Don T was instrumental in me getting sober. He helped me quite a bit because, you know, here I was, you know, going to meetings every day, relapsing. You know, I would have like 2 weeks, and then I'd relapse again. And I didn't want to relapse. I really didn't. But I didn't have any tools. You know, I didn't have any any tools, any spiritual tools. I didn't have any steps. I wasn't working the program. I was just winging it. So what happened was that I got with Don, and Don surrounded me with a lot of people. You know, we started, you know, hanging out with all the guys, and some of my friends are here now, and we started, you know, doing the deal. And it really makes a difference when you get involved. You know, and Water Walkers, you know, I remember the first time I went there, and then Don says, "Hey, you got to go to the retreat." And so I went to the Matt Talbot retreat, and that helped me quite a bit. And then the next thing we went to, I think we went to Big Sur, and I remember me and George here, we were in a motor home, and we're working the fourth step, you know, and one of the things that God really, really touched me was that I had the willingness. You know, a lot of times today, you know, if I don't have the willingness, I got to pray for the willingness. And early on, I remember, man, I used to chase my sponsor all over the place. You know, I was chasing him down because I really wanted it. You know, because I had been through that 2 years of misery. And I tell you, I'm the type of guy that, man, I'm in misery. I want to go drink. I want to go use. I'm not going to just sit there and be miserable. And I'm grateful for that relapse, because what happened was it made me realize that I have to do more. I'm the type of alcoholic. I have to do more. I have to get involved. I have to get engaged. I can't not be engaged. So me and Don T, we went, you know, we did the Big Sur run, and we were doing the steps, and you know, we went to Sedona, and so we were doing all this stuff, and you know what, Don. He was instrumental. I was very stubborn, though. Man, me and him used to argue all the time. And I was, you know, I can relate to Cynthia being stubborn because, you know, you couldn't tell me anything. I had this ego and pride, and you couldn't tell me a thing because I knew it already, you know. And me and him, I used to call him, and we used to be, you know, and one thing about Don, he was always there for me. He, you know, I'd call him in the middle of the night, and he was there. And one time, one of my friends, Stan, who lives in Antigua right now, me and him were sponsored by Don, and we went to the I think it was the convention, World Convention, and what happened was we, you know, me and Don and Stan, we were, you know, we went to the World Convention here, and then Stan, he got hooked up with a girl and he took off, and that was my friend. He took off with his chick and he was gone. He took off, you know, like sometimes, you know, there's a slip behind every skirt, and you got to be careful of these skirts. So what happened was here I have one good friend, Don, and then my other friend, Stan, and Stan took off, and he said he's going to go kill himself, you know. And he went out to, you know, he had a gun. He used to be a head security for HP, and he started smoking crystal. And I was going like, man, Stan, what's going to happen? And then he went to a corral. But guess what? He got sober. He got sober, you know, because God does miracles. You know, he got sober and he went to Whiteside. And, you know, now he's a counselor for Eric Clapton at Crossroads. So, you know, sometimes God, man, when you surrender to God, things happen to you. And I went to go see him, you know, about last a couple years ago. I went up there and visited him because he's a good friend of mine. But you know what? Sometimes when you surrender, you don't know what's going to happen to you. But, you know, Stan, and the funny thing about it is a good friend of mine, Greg, Stan went back to school, got a degree for a drug and alcohol counselor. And one of my friends, Greg, you know, he's got about 8 years, and Stan helped him. So, you know, sometimes, man, you just got these Eskimos in your path, and so it was pretty incredible with Stan. He was just a great guy. So me and Don, here we're going, doing the deal, and you know, we started getting into the step studies and doing it, you know, and I tell you, I had really a thirst and hunger for God, you know, because I know, to me, by myself, I can't do it. You know, I'm a drug addict, alcoholic to the bone, and I can't do it without God. So, you know, we started doing the deal and working the steps, and the first step is pretty much You know, I could have, you know, I knew a long time ago I had a problem with drinking and drugs. And I knew it, you know, but I didn't know what to do about it. But, you know, I didn't think my life was unmanageable because, you know, I had money in one account and no money in the other. And I wrote a bad check. But, you know, I thought, well, you know what? I went to work every day, you know. So I thought, well, you know what? I got it together. But you know what? You know, I went to work, showed up to work. You know, that's what I do is I go to work every day. And so, how can my life be unmanageable? But you know what? I realized that, you know what? I a lot of times I got fired. I got fired at work. You know, shit. I went, showed up, but some days I wouldn't show up. So, you know, I started thinking, well, you know, that's unmanageable, you know. Now I've been at my job for 11 years, you know, so things turn around. You know, before, I was a good, you know, they used to tell me, hey, you're a good employee when you start. Then all of a sudden you start not showing up. Then you show up late. Then you show up, you know, hungover, you know, and so it was a terrible employee. So, you know, there, my life was unmanageable. The second step came to believe the power of greater self would restore me to sanity. You know, I was insane. I was totally insane, you know, using all those drugs and stuff. You know, you get psychosis, man. And I was, at the end, I was not a well person. And, you know, I, by the grace of God today, I'm sane most of the time, you know. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you're still an alcoholic, you know, no matter what. You know, and came to believe that the power of greater selves, coming to believe is a process. You know, for me, you know, going back to my Catholic upbringing, and thank God for my mother. You know, she was there for me, and you know, she prayed for me, and that's why I pray for people all the time, because I know that sometimes you can't reach people. You know, some people are willing, some people are not willing. And if you pray for them, you know, maybe they'll get convicted. You know, so it's a powerful thing, but. You know, I didn't really have a problem with God. Never had a problem with Him. You know, I wanted to run the show. I thought I was God. Is what the problem was. You know, in this program, you have to turn it over to God. And sometimes that's not easy. You know, you want to hold on to a lot of things. You know, you want to hold on to some of the stuff. And you know, but once you turn it over, and one of my experiences is the more I turn it over to God, the easier it is for me. If I turn it over to Him and say, "Hey, God, you take this." You know, and I can't, you know, that's my experience. And recently I've had, you know, character, you know, we all have character defects. And I realized recently I just turned it over, man, He takes it over. And He's been a blessing in my life. And then, you know, the fourth step, man, that's my favorite step, the fourth step. And, but, you know, it talks about in the big book, it talks about that the third step has very little effect unless you start the fourth step right away. And thank God, you know, and Don taught me that four step. You know, we have a retreat every year called the Rocket Riders Retreat. And that's in memory of Don T. Every September, we go out to Julian. We have a little place out there, about 20 guys out there. And we do a retreat, and it's you know, it's like the YMCA, you know. We go climb this hill, and then we go walk in, and then we go do some four-step work, and we just break it down like Donnie would, you know, and we do it in memory of him, because he was just a real instrumental kind of guy. You know, he's just a wonderful guy. You know, just God put him in my life. And the fourth step, you know, you know, one of the things about the fourth step that's real difficult, it's not really difficult. It's just that for us, we do an eight columns, you know, the first column, you know, say, okay, who are you resentful for? You know, you do the resentful. And then, you know, why are you resentful? And then what does it affect? And, you know, it affects everything most of the time. And then it talks about what's your part, you know, and that's where you need a sponsor to help you. What's your part? And then we break it down a little bit more. And it's, you know, because you know what? Before you have an action, you have a thought. And the thought, what's your thought process? Because if you have that same thought, it's going to keep occurring. You get a resentment, you're going to trigger yourself, and it's going to be a thought. Something's going to happen. And then you got the seven deadly sins, and then you got a solution. And usually the solution is to pray for that person, forgive them, you know, just... And I like to say, hey, what I should do instead. And I'm glad that I got that tool, because one of my favorite pages in the big book is page 25. And it talks about being rocketed into the fourth dimension. And one of the things that, you know, we were rocketed into the fourth dimension is that we, you know, there's a process involved. You know, it's like if you go to, I'm a sales manager. So, you know, my guys, you know, I tell them, hey, you got to go sell something, you know. If they don't sell nothing, nothing happens, you know. You can talk about it, you can, you know, but hey, you guys, you know, I got to push them to sell something, you know. We don't make any money if they don't sell anything. So we got to make it happen. And same thing in the program. If you don't do nothing, nothing's going to happen. You know, I don't care. You know, you can't get this by osmosis. You know, I mean, you can identify. But from my experience, it's tough, man. It's tough being around here not doing anything. So, you know, and that's the message I like to carry, is that, you know what, we got an easier, softer way. You know, if you're willing, you know, find somebody that's done it for you. And you can really get there. And so, you know, we do these eight columns, and the last column, you know, we talk about what I should do instead, you know, and we break it down. And when you do these resentments, one of the resentments that would come up would be like, I'm resentful of myself because I can't tell you no. You know, I get mad at you, but I should be mad at myself because, hey, why don't I just, you know, say, hey, this is unacceptable to me. And then, you know, you break it down even further, and you know, we... You know, a lot of times there's a lot of things below the layer. You know, there's layers of stuff. And so I really like, you know, working the steps. That's my favorite thing, especially with the four step. And then the fifth step is an incredible thing. I did my first step, my friend Stan, I drove up all the way to Whiteside to go see him, and he was in treatment. And Don, he wasn't feeling very good at the time. So we went and I did a fifth step. Man, I'll tell you, I did a long fifth step. But, man, after that, I was like, wow, I knew I wasn't going to drink again. And I'm grateful for that, you know, because I haven't had the urge, you know, ever since then. You know, I never had the urge to drink again. And that's why I believe in the steps. The six and seven, you know, you got to be willing. You know, when you work your four columns, you look at your character defects. You know, if you have a resentment, you're going to have a reaction. And that reaction is what your character defects are. And your character defects, you know, and then you got to be willing to let God take those over. That's been my experience. You know, left to my own devices, I can't control that. So, you know, six and seven. Then the eighth step comes along. And the eighth step, pretty much, you know, you've done your fourth step. Your eighth step is but now you look at where you're a little bit like, you know, when you get angry at somebody, or you get a little, you know, somebody, you know, like for me in my work, you know, somebody gets me irritated or something, or you know, just where I'm angry, you know, and so I write all that out, you know. And then the ninth step, I think, is the most powerful step, making amends. You know, I did a lot of stealing when I was out there, and what I had to do is I had to go back and make amends to these people. You know, and one lady at a liquor store, I took money from. I went and seen her, and I told her, hey, you know what, I was stealing from you, and she said, oh, she left me off pretty good, easy, you know. But then there was I worked at a 7-Eleven, and she said no, she wanted her money. So I had to go. I went and paid it, you know. So that's not my money; it's her money. And so, you know, I really and then I owed a friend of mine about, you know, he was a bar owner, and I owed him about $1,400 or something. And I went back and I made amends to him. But I'll tell you one thing: that after one of those amends, man, I'll tell you, that's when I was really feeling good. I knew that I was changing at that time, because I knew. You know, because when you make an amends to somebody for your behavior, you know, then it's like, you know, I don't know. It's just like you're a new person. I don't know how you describe it, but, man, a lot of times it's hard making amends. So, you know, I cleaned up the wreckage of my past. You know, I made amends to my father, my mother, you know, everybody that I can think of. And it really, I don't know, it's just a very powerful. Then the 10th step comes along. And the 10th step, you know, you take a personal inventory every, you know, and see where you're at fault. And one of the things about the 10th step was good is when you're wrong, you promptly admit it, you know. And I'll tell you, I could never promptly admit anything that I was wrong. I was always right, you know, and I was always right. And what I realized is that working the program, you know, the other day, associate of mine, I said something inappropriate to him. So, you know, I said, man, you know what, I got to go make amends to him. And I went and made amends. And then, you know, and I said, you know what, I'm not going to repeat that behavior again. You know, because if I say I'm sorry, then I do it the next day, I'm not really sorry. You know, I have to mean it. And I have to be convicted by God to realize that, hey, I just can't keep running amok. So, you know, that's a very powerful step. And then, then you write out there again, you do a little mini, you know, four step again, find out, you know, if you have any fear, you know, if you have any resentments, you know, the sex or whatever's going on in your life, you know. And, and one of the things I learned from Don was I can't have any spiritual progress unless I'm looking at myself, I'm inventorying myself, because otherwise I can lie to myself. I can be in delusion. I can say, hey, you know, I'm doing great. And so, you know, I was able, you know, to, you know, that 10th step is, you know, I think it's another powerful step. The 11th step is, coming closer to God. You know, I pray every day, meditate every day. You know, I do it without fail. And it's just it's a part of my routine. I get up in the morning, reading my books, my spiritual books. Then I, get in a contemplative state of mind. And before I start the day, you know, every single day, you know, I've done that for about 10 years. And then I pray at night and I pray for people all the time. You know, and it really works. And the 12th step, you know, it's, you know, practicing all these principles in all my affairs. You know, that's a hard order. You know, a lot of times we have a lot of, when we start getting a lot of affairs, you know, working and, you know, relationships but one of the things I learned is that, you know what, you don't ever know when somebody's watching you, you know, like we get evaluations at work or when another fellow AA is watching you, you know, and saying, hey, what you're doing, because we do a lot of talking. You know, it's like I listen to a lot of salesmen all day long. So a lot of them, you know, they tell me a lot of, you know, they don't tell me the truth all the time. A lot of lying going on here. A lot of lying going on. And I know, and that's my greatest asset. I can listen to that. You guys are bullshitting me. But you know what? And you never know when somebody's watching you and saying, hey, what kind of program you're working. And so, you know, I've been sponsoring a couple of new guys, you know, Friday night group, a couple of guys. One guy's like, he's like about 59, and the other one's like about 52. And they got about 30 days and 9 months, you know, and they're really willing. And we just finished the first step last night, you know, and man, that's something I love. You know, I love working with people. You know, that's the thing, that the greatest thing I love to do is to work with somebody and try to, you know, because you know what, if you had a magic potion, you know, then you want to give it to somebody, man, wouldn't you give it to them? You know, and a lot of times though around here, what I've noticed is that we are not willing, you know, to work the program. And I'm so grateful. That's why I'm grateful for my relapses. I'm really grateful for that, because that showed me that, hey, I got to work this program. I can't just sit, you know, there, you know, doing nothing. So, you know, and now I'm getting ready to do another Matt Traubert retreat. Water Walkers has been instrumental in helping me. I think we're doing a new one up at Temecula. I think it's the 25th, 26th, 27th. And man, at these retreats, you know, they're pretty spiritual, you know, and my connection with God is good. You know, I don't have, you know, I love God to death. You know, I have a hunger and thirst for God, you know, and that's something I love, you know, something it's, you know, I love AA and I love God, and it's just great. And, you know, I got to talk about this a little bit. I got married in sobriety. You know, we met on AA campus, and we were at the spring roundup a few years ago, and we got married and everything, and you know, it looks like we were, you know, on the road to happy destiny, and it didn't turn out that way, you know, and so you know, and that was the toughest thing I had to go through, you know, is because you know we did it right. We became friends first, and then. But she chose to go back out, and boy, it was a tough deal, man. And one of the things I realized in that relationship is that I'm very codependent, very, very codependent, and that's what it is. You know, I didn't know that about myself. But one of the things in that process that I learned about myself is that how much I affect other people. And I thought, you know, when I was out there drinking, you know, I didn't have any kids. I was there by myself. But my mother, man, she was worried about me. My father was worried about me, you know, and you know, I put a lot of stress on that family, and they didn't know where I was at. And now when my wife was, you know, that was tough, you know, it was really a tough deal, you know, and I don't want to really say too much about her, because you know what, it's what is done is done. You know, one thing I had to do to her is to make amends for my side of the street. One of the things, it doesn't matter what you're doing, it's what I'm doing. Because if I don't keep my side of the street clean, and so what happened was I made amends to her, you know, because I was yelling at her, and you know, and she was doing a bunch of stuff. But you know what? It doesn't matter what she's doing; it's what I'm doing. And I made amends to her, and I was free. And one thing I learned is that I can't live in these anger, resentment, and hostility. I can't do it. I just refuse to do it. I won't do it. And then I had to make amends to my mother-in-law, because what happened was one time she was, you know, it's her daughter, you know, and she's telling me it's my fault. And then I'm going like, and I started yelling at her. So I said, you know what, you know, I had to call her back and say, hey, you know what, you know, she was getting a car that it was in my name. And I said, you know what, Edith, you know, I got to make amends for my side of the street, because I can't be in this resentment. You know, and as a matter of fact, today my wife called me, you know, and we were civil on the phone. And, you know, and that's the testimony of this program, working the steps, God and everybody else. Because left to my own devices, I would not forgive her. I would hold on to that resentment and not be able to be free. And I'm so grateful, you know, that I was able to just say, hey, you know what, it happened. It's done. I'm moving on. And you know, in my life today, you know, it's a good life. You know, I like I said, I shared about helping others. I love doing that. You know, it's something I really love. And on Friday night, I'm a leader at another group, and we really have fun doing that. And my, you know, like I talked to my father. You know, we're like best friends. You know, it's funny how my mother was very intimate. You know how you get close to your mother if you're a guy, and my father was like, man, you know, he never even talked to me. But now, you know, it's like, it's really strange that we're like so close to each other. You know, we got the same first name. My first name is Feliciano. My father's Feliciano, and I had a grandfather, Feliciano. So that's three Felicianos. It's a lot of Felicianos. But, it's good. You know, and you know, one of the things now is that he's proud of me, you know, and he sees what I do, you know, and that's a testimony to God, program, working the steps, because, you know, left to my own devices, I'm a liar, cheat, and a thief, you know, that's what I can say. And, you know, and I'm real grateful to my friends here, came up, you know, these guys, you know, one thing about Don that what we would do is he knew we couldn't do it by ourselves. You know, I try to do it by myself, and I would fail, but together we can do it. So we'd get together with a bunch of guys, man, like about every night we were at dinner. We'd go to Coco's every night. We'd be at a meeting every night. And in the first few years, I thought, man, if I don't go to that meeting, I'm going to go get drunk. You know, I that's the kind of fear I had. And so, and I know today it works. You know, we've got a lot of, you know, we have a good group. We have a Saturday men's breakfast meeting that, you know, that most of the guys go to the Rocket Rider retreat, and we really have fun at that retreat. You know, we do rock climbing, and it's so much fun. So that's all I have, I guess. I'm a little early, but